Folks, it's 2:15. We're continuing agenda item number 4, which is the proposed conditional waiver of WDRs for irrigated agriculture. This has been continued from yesterday's session. Dr. Wolf?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I will recuse myself at this time from participating to item 4 due to conflict of interest being a agriculture discharger.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Briggs. So we are now at the 5-minute rebuttal period.
Right. The ag representatives had their 60 minutes allocated to them, and they chose to save their last 5 minutes for response to everything that they heard yesterday. And I understand that's going to be Tess Dunham.
Okay. Thank you. For the reporter's purposes, Tess, T-E-S-S, some feedback there. Dunham, D-U-N-H-A-M, with SOMAC, Simmons, and Dunn, representing Farmers for Water Quality. And I just, you know, obviously not knowing exactly what will be in the staff response, so making some guesses and in trying to address some issues that I think would be of interest to the board. We heard pretty frequently yesterday the need to trust and verify. And I think it's in wanting to clarify some components with respect to what could be added into the ag proposal to maybe provide the board members with that sense of a verification and trust would be appropriate that an independent audit that has been done would be part of the farm plan or would be a required element of the farm plan that is to be remained on site, and that if staff comes to inspect the farm plan, as they are allowed under the draft order, that they would then be able to review the audit that was done by the independent auditor through the third-party group. So in an effort to try to provide some additional, you know, trust and verification to the process, that would be an element that we think would be appropriate and would not be one that we would be opposed to. So we put that forward in a form of clarification here today as something else for the board to consider should they decide to consider the ag proposal and if you know, looking for that trust and verification process. So then the only other thing I really wanted to touch upon here today is really talking about what we mean by individual reporting or group reporting or watershed reporting. There's obviously been significant discussion with respect to what is the legal standard and the legal requirement. Well, Water Code Section 13269 with respect to monitoring says a couple of basic things. One, it says that you must have monitoring with a conditional waiver, and that monitoring may be individual, it may be group, or it may be watershed-based. It also says that the monitoring must support the development and implementation of the waiver, and it must verify the adequacy and effectiveness of the waiver's conditions, and that those monitoring results must be made public. We, of course, would contend that what we are proposing does comply with all three of those elements. And specifically, what we are talking with respect to the reporting is group reporting that does verify and provide the effectiveness of the waiver. If you recall the box plots that Dr. Los Hertos put forward that really showed and compared growers, and you can really determine whether management practices are working or not, is a form of verification in order to make those determinations to see if the waiver is working or not. And of course, those public reports or those summaries that would be given to the regional board would absolutely be public. This is absolutely consistent with how it is done in Regions 5, Regions 4, and Region 6. This is a form, a standard, a process that the State Water Board approved in its 2004 order when it reviewed the conditional waiver for the Central Valley, and it is a format and a process that is allowed under the Water Code. And so we would hope that as you work on all this today, you take all of that into consideration with respect to the reporting, its group format, and that it does meet the legal standards within the Water Code. Now, policy decision, if the board decides that it wants something more different, to me that is a different question with respect to whether does it meet the legal standard. So that's what the main points we wanted to leave with you as you start your deliberations today. And if there are any questions, of course.
Any board questions? Okay. Thank you. One thing I'd like to just alert you to, I know you lodged some objections yesterday.
Yes,
at the beginning of our session. I just wanted to remind you to take the opportunity right now during your rebuttal period. If there's anything that you heard that you had objected to, that this would be an opportunity for you to rebut what you heard.
You know, the only thing I would add is, you know, there's been a lot of obvious reference and a lot of press media to the recent UC Davis report that's come out. And I think it's important for everybody to understand that that report was released on Tuesday. It is over 1,300 pages, and it's going to take time for everybody to review and comprehend the extent of what that report says and what it means. And as with any report, we're all going to pick and choose elements out of it that we like and those that we don't like, as it is with any scientific or technical report. I also would note, and I think it may have been mentioned earlier today, that the State Water Board is holding a workshop with respect to that report on May 23rd, and from there we'll be looking to give guidance to, I believe, the regional boards as well. So I think we all need to sit back, take some time, review it ourselves, understand it ourselves, and make our own determinations and conclusions with respect to the information, and then participate in the state board's hearing.
Okay. And I'm sure you can appreciate that we haven't read the report.
Yet neither have I, Chairman Young, so I can appreciate that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's nothing that we haven't considered it because it's not part of the evidence.
Understood.
On this matter. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Briggs.
So the order of events, if I've got it right, is that the staff will have an opportunity to provide their response to comments yesterday, as well as the summary, and then back to me for final recommendation.
Okay. And everybody speak up loudly and clearly.
Good afternoon. Again, I'm Lisa McCann, MCCANN, Environmental Program Manager. I brought my suitcase today in case you make me sleep over again. just kidding. Last night, we successfully and you patiently got through all the public comment, and you also gave us a homework assignment. And we took that seriously, and Mr. Johnston, you specifically asked, what is the most effective order that you, the board, can pass to improve water quality, which meets legal standards? And you also asked what legal and policy issues need to be resolved to make the proposed edits an alternative from Farmers for Water Quality work. We reviewed the proposed edits from Farmers for Water Quality and the additional issues that were raised yesterday during comments and during your various questions. And we've prepared responses that we will present to you in next slide. Oh, sorry. You can bring them all. Yeah. In this order, this is generally what we're gonna address. So it would be the responses to the edits as proposed from Farmers for Water Quality, some other suggested edits in response to comments, and then just if we have time and interest, response to some of the other issues that were discussed, and then, as Roger mentioned, make a recommendation. I do want to assure you that our responses represent the best way to advance water quality improvement so that aquatic habitat becomes healthier and drinking water becomes safe for the communities on the Central Coast.
Okay, so I think the easiest way to go through this is to actually go through the presentation provided by Ms. Dunham yesterday. And I can talk a little bit about what our response is to the information. In some cases, it's a legal response is going to be required, and so I'll defer to Francis. Sure. I'll defer to Francis for those. We didn't have the opportunity to prepare a handout to go with these slides. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it in the format where there's notes on the bottom of this presentation, and then you can just read off the notes as we entered them last night and this morning. Can you read that where it says, no, let's just do it the other way, the slide view. Sorry.
There you go. Yeah. Here?
It's right here. It's right. No, no escape. It's good. There, perfect. Okay, maybe we can expand this a little bit, maybe. Is that going to work? Can I?
I don't think it will.
I just want to clarify what we're trying to show you here. We put the notes and some of the responses to the edits that were proposed in the notes area in the PowerPoint. So we don't want to use the slide view because then we won't be able to show you the notes. So it's going to be a little bit less than the full view of the slides, but hopefully you'll be able to follow along and see exactly what we're trying to help you see.
And what I suggest you do is to use your handout yesterday that Ms. Dunham provided to you to go ahead and do your markups. So, in general, our review focused on all of these items in the presentation, but especially in areas where there were suggested changes. And we'll go through specifically how we responded to those specific changes or not, and provide you with our justification. So this first one is that there is a statement here that growers are treated differently. However, the treatment is not necessarily based upon the threat to water quality, but size of operation. And what I wanted to remind you, if I can pull up, let's see if I can pull up my presentation, but with the tiering, the tiering or the criteria for each of the tiers. So this one I can do here. So, in response to comments both in November as well in March of 2011, we proposed tiers that were based upon threats to water quality. Tier 1, which is the lowest threat, Tier 2, the moderate threat, and Tier 3 is the higher threat. We did evaluate all sources of information in terms of what was causing the impairments in the region for toxicity as well as for groundwater. And we knew that the major drivers for both those items were pesticide use, and specific pesticides were causing much of the toxicity. And we knew that fertilizer application, specifically excessive fertilizer application, was causing the impairments to groundwater. So what we tried to do in terms of taking a reasonable approach in advancing the current order was to apply this tier criteria. So I'm just going to jump down to Tier 3 because I think that is where there's a lot of concern about whether or not this really is an indicator of risk. So Tier 3 is those farms that use chlorpyrifosfordiazinon and discharge to an impaired surface water that is impaired specifically for toxicity and pesticides. So there, in our in staff's opinion and judgment, there is no other more better indicator for threats to water quality. It's use of a chemicals known to cause toxicity, specifically pesticide and chlorpyrifos, and an actual discharge to a water body that's already impaired for pesticides and toxicity, simply that. The second one is nitrogen loading crop type and an acreage greater than 500 acres. So it's important to look at how the tiers relate to each other because, again, remember, this is relative threat. So in this case, the acreage for Tier 3 is 500 acres, and the acreage for Tier 1 is 50 acres. All things held the same, for example, a lettuce crop, the potential risk or threat to water quality for a 500-acre farm is much, much different than a 50-acre farm. And I'm going to show, we'll show you also in a moment when we get to other issues, how we build the conditions from Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 based upon that risk. So it's not that the Tier 1 farms don't have any conditions, for example, related to nutrients. They just have lesser than those in Tier 3.
So, Angela, so what, if I can just restate what you just said, you're saying it's the size of the operation, but also the type of pesticide they're using and the higher crop potential for nitrogen loading to the groundwater.
Right.
Okay, so it's not one size fits all.
It's not one size fits all, and it doesn't mean that no one in Tier 1 or Tier 2 have any risk. It's relative risk and a balancing of reasonable requirements relative to that risk.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the second one is requesting is talking about the staff report in terms of the executive officer elevating to Tier 1 or Tier 2, and that the EOMA require also looking at the specifics of operations and farms in terms of the tiering. Sure. So in response to these, what we're suggesting here is to also address, I can't remember the gentleman's name about the smaller farms. He talked about smaller farms and the 300. It was Sanchez. I can't remember his name. Sanchez, I think.
Sanchez.
It's Mr. Sanchez. And whether or not how are we going to deal with those smaller farms? And one of the suggestions that we are suggesting in the order, and I don't know if it's an appropriate time to pass out these, Michael, but okay, is to look at those specific farms that have a specific disadvantage. So USDA actually has a definition for limited resource farmers, and to prioritize compliance assistance for those types of farms. In the interest of time, I'm wondering if I should just jump to those that speak to specific edits. Okay. How do I go up there and do this?
Well, are you done then with that particular issue of the EO having the ability to elevate to a higher tier an individual?
Monica, if I suggest this, that maybe we all hold our questions,
okay,
write them down,
right,
so we can have staff tell us what they want to tell us,
okay,
and then we'll launch in with our questions. That might just help get through this point.
Yes, you asked me that yesterday, and I forgot.
Yeah, that's okay.
Thank you.
So what I'm doing now is I'm going to this their first slide of suggested edits. I think it's actually this one, right? Well, starting on page 18, the Farmers for Water Quality starts suggesting specific edits. For example, here the suggestion is related to attachment 1B. Attachment 1B includes 140 findings, and the solution was not to adopt Attachment 1B. Attachment 1B basically is the attachment to the order, which includes all of the findings about the rationale for the conditions in the order. So staff included these to be transparent about the justification and rationale for those conditions. And so we do not agree with the suggestion to not adopt or not include attachment 1B. Yeah, there's no numbers on the page. Numbers, sorry. It has the heading in here, attachment 1B. Got it? Okay, so next page.
So you're not going page by page?
In the interest of time, since this presentation was 66 slides, I'm going straight to the ones where there was suggested modification to the order or MRP. And then we can go back if you want to discuss any of the other items.
You're in the right spot.
Yeah. But there were several pages in between. I thought you were doing page by page.
Okay, go ahead.
So the second one relates to Table 1A in Attachment 1B, and that, if you recall, is a table of water quality standards. They're specifically calling out the narrative objective for biosimulation. And the objection is that we included language here at the bottom, which is the Water Board staff estimates that 1 mg/L nitrate is necessary to protect aquatic life. We agree that that's not an adopted standard, and so we have a suggestion, or we agree with the edit to delete that.
So you're agreeing to delete Table 1A.
No, just this piece of just the sentence in 1A. What Michael is handing out is a supplemental sheet which actually summarizes all of the proposed edits.
And Angela, do you have copies for people in the audience?
I'm not sure how much admin made, but I think that there's a lot of extras there.
Well, we need to make sure everybody who wants a copy gets a copy.
We can make as many copies as we
need. Okay.
That was predictable.
Yes.
There's a guy in the back that wants one.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. While you turn around, we're going to need more copies. So.
Okay, but just remember that this is the end of the comment period, and this is so you can continue going without them perceiving that the comments have already happened.
Okay.
So they can have them, but this is the staff's response, and there's no requirement that they have them.
Okay.
So.
So we're still off the record here. But folks, we'll have to make some more copies. We will continue. And we'll bring the copies in when they're available.
You do? Okay.
Thank you.
Here's another copy. All right.
May I ask a question about the last edit?
Would it be helpful if you opened up the order and we can go to the page?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
And then I just want to clarify which sentence is being deleted in Table 1A.
It's on your yellow sheet right there, number one.
So in front of you, you have a supplemental sheet. What it includes is all of the edits suggested by staff in response to both the information presented by Farmers for Water Quality, as well as some issues that were brought up by the board members themselves yesterday. And if I can just make a suggestion or give you some options for how to go through this. So we have the slides in front of us for Farmers for Water Quality. We have the edits here in the yellow sheet, and we also have the order itself. So I can connect back to the order, we can go to the page, and we can look at that specific change.
Okay, can
Angela,
we...
Angela, on the yellow sheet, Angela, when you don't say attachment A, does that mean you're back in the order? Like the second
yes.
item? Okay, thanks.
Good question.
Okay, are you ready for the second change you're going to tell us about, or... proposed change that you addressed and have a response to?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, so there's just to clarify, there are our comments relate to specific changes as well as to the general concept described as Part E. And Part E is very large, and I think it is going to be an involved discussion. So I'm going to defer the Part E sections until last. Is that okay?
Sure.
We just passed several that have
Are you ready? She's ready again.
Okay, let's continue.
Okay. I have a suggestion, Mr. Chairman, that we have 66 pages that were submitted in the form of slides and with recommended changes, and some of those are edits, some are policy things, some are rebuttal. And so what I am proposing is that instead of the board trying to follow along in the order or in the attachments or in this, even in this sheet that we just handed out, that we just stick to the issue that's on the board, the slide that's up here, where we are recommending an edit. We'll stop at each one where we're recommending an edit in response to the suggestion. So we'll just focus on that to try and simplify this.
I thought that's what we were trying to do.
Okay, but I think what happened is when we passed out the yellow sheet, and I can see the board members trying to follow along with the yellow sheet and with the order itself trying to match things
okay.
up.
Okay.
I think it's too complex.
Okay, so we'll stick to what's on the screen, okay. Right?
Okay.
But it, well, find it on here.
And since the audience only has the yellow sheet, perhaps, then maybe you could tell them each slide where it is on the yellow sheet that we're talking about.
Just so to clarify that the all the public comment has occurred. Now you're hearing from the staff's rebuttal. So the staff needs to communicate with you what they want to communicate, because the public isn't going to have an opportunity to say more. So they can follow, you know, the staff can clarify to the extent they can, but
I understand, but it helps everyone if the public can follow along.
And I apologize if I sound like I'm not saying that the public needs to understand, but that it's important that the that you understand, and not to get distracted by lots of different things, but just make sure the board understands the staff's responses.
So I think that these are self-explanatory when we look at them. The order requires currently requires, as this states, and I'm going right to the part where it has red text. Organic materials such as organic pesticides, and we agree that we should cross that out, and registered pesticides that may, and we agree to add that language with the exception of taking out the word registered, so it's just pesticides. So we're agreeing with most of that edit in that part of the order.
Okay, I just want to note that on the yellow sheet, the word registered is not there. And that's your point?
Yes. Yes.
That the yellow sheet is what you want to suggest to us?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Next slide?
Yes, next slide.
Next slide, it's slide 28. I'm sorry the slides are not numbered. We agree with this edit as it is presented here. We're agreeing to make this change to the order. And I'm going to keep going unless you stop me.
That's fine. Just make sure we find the page before you advance.
I'm sorry. I hate to booger up the process, but it'd be nice if you would justify the change or the disagreement. On the previous slide, you did not agree to the word registered. And I know that that makes a big difference, whether you talk about registered pesticides or all pesticides. And you're recommending all pesticides.
Yes.
So that's a big enough difference that I'd like you to explain the justification.
The reason that we took out registered is because we thought that it's possible that pesticides might be used that are not registered. That's all. We don't want to.
And that's because not all pesticides need to be registered. I mean, there's a lot of things that you use to address pests that are not toxic enough to require registration, right? Like safe soaps, and there's lots of things you can use to kill pests.
Hold on 1 second. Folks, it's hard for us up here to hear clearly when there's mumbling in the background. I would encourage you, please don't do it.
So my question is, are there pesticides that are legal to use that are not required to be registered?
We were just intending it to be inclusive of any type of pesticide used, registered, unregistered, any type of thing, chemical, that you would use to control pests.
Right. So my question is, are there pesticides that are legal to use in this context that are not required to be registered with the EPA?
I'm not certain of that answer. What I'm thinking of, for example, are examples like the bait traps that are currently out. I'm not sure if that's a registered pesticide, but that would be an example of what we were thinking of.
And just to clarify, the point of this particular provision is that it's saying what is covered. And so the waiver is covering the discharge of those things. So whether it's a, quote, registered pesticide or not, it's just saying that's the scope of this provision. It's not saying that they're discharging unregistered pesticides. It's just this waiver applies to things that constitute waste, and waste includes pesticides, whether they're registered or not. I don't know if they're, it doesn't really matter if they're any registered, or I mean they're not, or they are registered. For this purpose, it's just the scope of the waiver, so that they can be allowed to discharge that. Otherwise, if it doesn't cover it, they'd have to go get some other permit to discharge.
So staff is considering this to be in favor of the growers by expanding the kinds of things that they can apply, if it ever is needed, to include things that are not registered pesticides.
No, the context of this requirement is to talk about what can be discharged to water, what's covered by this order. Is that?
And so you're thinking that deleting the word registered or leaving that word out is favorable to the growers because it allows them to discharge more?
No, it's not favorable or unfavorable. This is just sort of a general statement that these kinds of things are the kinds of things that could be discharged under the waiver. And so, you know, it's...
The language used to say, such as organic pesticides. Tess yesterday suggested that that language be removed and added registered pesticides. We agree with that statement and just are simply saying that we want to remove the word registered because it might preclude some pesticides that are not
registered.
I'm a little confused because I was under the impression all pesticides are registered.
That's not my understanding, but I'm not an expert on pesticide registration.
Maybe some homemade ones may not be. But my understanding is before a farmer can apply pesticides, he has to file. He does not. I see people shaking their heads. They don't have to file that they're using that application on a particular farm?
I believe that they have to file if they're using a registered pesticide.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, let me just say something. We're getting bogged down on the trees and losing, you know, we're losing eyesight of the forest here. This is just describing waste kind of generally. Whether it's registered or not, I don't think it's really an issue. Pesticides. It's a type of waste that's involved in this. So there may be some that aren't. There may be some that are. For this purpose, I don't think it's going to make any difference at all because it's definitional. So,
well, it is definitional, and if it becomes an issue, it can be brought back to the board and reconsidered.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like anything can be. Okay.
Next slide is slide 28.
Which is
I know. I thought you might count them.
Well, we'll just have to go with that.
The next one, yeah. Okay, we agree with this change. So we're going to make this change.
As is.
As is.
Okay. This is a little easier to follow this way.
There's a change here. But we're okay. We're not agreeing with this change on this next slide.
And why?
We don't think it's necessary to add the language to the extent feasible. We don't think it's necessary to add the language, quote, to the extent feasible, unquote.
Now, for the purpose of the audience, I'm not seeing this in the yellow sheet.
Because we're not agreeing to this change. Okay.
I'd want to back up on this because Tess was recommending the words to the extent feasible be added to
right,
dischargers must to the extent feasible do X, Y, and Z regarding vegetative cover along the creeks, et cetera. And so to me, they're saying, to the extent feasible, give some wiggle room so that things considered infeasible would not be required of them to do. And I think staff is probably saying that that wiggle room is not room that they want to allow to be put into this language. And I just wanted to make sure that that's the justification for not agreeing to this.
Well, there's two main reasons. One is it's difficult to define what is to the extent feasible. It's an ambiguous term. The other reason is that's a consideration with all of the requirements. So if a grower has difficulty implementing something because of feasibility, that would be a consideration. So we don't generally apply that to every single condition that we...
Okay, and I agree with this because I think that every time you have a shall or a must throughout this ag order, you could add those words to the extent practical, feasible, etc., and it doesn't really change much. But if we're going to change it in one place, we'd want to wholesale change it everywhere throughout the document, right? Everywhere you had a must or a shall, we could be at this place of considering this addition. Okay.
Yes, and the existing language also says in aquatic habitat areas as necessary to minimize. So we already have language in there that is... provides wiggle room.
Well, that's wiggle room in a different way, mm-hmm. right? As necessary is different than feasible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the wiggle room is the minimize. You're not stopping it, just minimizing. So,
right.
You know, so that's the feasibility fits into that.
So you got two wiggles, you don't need three.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Okay, next one.
Okay, next one, we don't agree with the change. My intent in going through these was actually to stop on the ones where we agree with changes and not spend a lot of time on the ones where we don't agree with the changes. I wanted to just go to the ones we do, but we are...
Well, I think we want...
Okay.
I'd like to know which ones you're not agreeing to so we can just take a quick look at it.
Okay.
Read it quickly, and then we can move on if we have no questions on it.
Okay, so the next slide, in the case where disturbance of aquatic habitat is necessary for the purposes of water quality improvement or restoration activities, dischargers must implement appropriate and practicable measures. We disagree with the deletion. We think that is necessary and reasonable language.
But we also added language to clarify that it relates to the other permitted activities. So things like the 4-0, the stream authorization agreements, I want to say the 401 certifications. So the change would be, in the case where disturbance of aquatic habitat is necessary for the purposes of water quality improvement or restoration activities or other permitted activities. So just to clarify that it wasn't only for those water quality improvement.
Right. So if that makes sense, we're saying that there can be disturbance of aquatic habitat, and it could be done as part of a stream alteration agreement or a 401 certification program or a 401 certification, and there are requirements associated with those. And for whatever the reason, for whatever reason the farmer would need to create that disturbance, they can get a permit to do it.
Angela, it looks like you skipped over paragraph 35, page 19. The one that unagreed.
It's going to come up.
Okay, sorry.
Skip that.
So do we, I have a question to the chair. Do we care about grammar or English details at this point, or does that get cleaned up later by staff and...
It doesn't get cleaned up later.
Okay.
When we vote on something.
All right. So normally when you say or, you only say it once. So I would say purposes of water quality improvement, comma, delete the first or, restoration activities or other permitted activities. Just like an and. You wouldn't use an and over and over.
Well, What I would suggest for that is you note it, and then if the board ends up choosing to make those revisions, then we can correct all that then. We can identify the ones.
Is somebody logging all these little details?
Yeah.
We are.
I hate to get to this level, but I just wanted to ask the chair what he thought about grammar, small details.
I haven't been concerned with grammar. Up until now, I hate to admit that.
And if I can read it
and understand it, you know, I'm usually good with that.
And if it's a non-substantive grammar, that can be corrected without needing a board's vote.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, if there's confusion to the way it's written, yes, we got to get it corrected. Yeah. But you know, yeah. All right. Tell me what page we're on.
31. Slide 31.
What paragraph number is that in? Page 43. Okay. Okay.
Okay. This suggested edit is to add language. Farm plans must be kept current, kept on the farm, and a current copy must be made available to Central Coast Water Board staff upon request. And the recommended edit is to add the language, should Central Coast Water Board staff conduct an inspection of the farm or ranch.
Right.
We don't agree with that edit.
Right.
That information should be made available on request,
right,
not based on a visit.
Right.
Okay, so comment here. It's obviously a big trust issue. They don't want a document leaving the site, because it could be copied, distributed to who knows, you know, and as far as their perspective, to who knows who. So this is a pretty big issue, right? So we shouldn't be making it up one way or the other. What's the industry standard? How do other regions handle farm plan?
Okay, well, I can answer that. First of all, under the water code, the board has the authority to require the submittal of technical reports. My recommendation on this is that I can't advise you to accept this edit, because the board has the right and responsibility to have technical reports submitted to them so that they can evaluate water quality. So this would then preclude the board from getting information. It's already in the current order. The Central Valley order requires these kinds of reports to be submitted as soon as there's one, automatically if there's one exceedance of a water quality standard within 3 years, or upon the request of the executive officer. I mean, this is the normal process for the board to implement its laws, is to require technical reports be submitted upon request. So this would say the staff would have to go to the farm, look at it, and then they couldn't take it back to evaluate it.
Thank you. Mr. Johnston.
And just to be clear about what the concern is that's being expressed, I don't think it's a concern that it would somehow slip out the back door of the water board. The concern is that except for proprietary information in that report once it's received here, does become publicly accessible information.
Correct.
As a matter of...
Right, but that's not correct, that they can identify the proprietary information, and the board is obligated by law to keep it protected. And they already do that. There's quite a few reports in all the different programs that are submitted regularly that have basically two reports are submitted, the redacted report with the confidential information deleted, that's the public report, and then a private report that the staff keeps separately. And that happens in many programs. All the regional boards deal with this on a regular basis.
So. Okay.
And just so you know, the order does very clearly state how the process for how the person would identify what is proprietary, and they can do that.
Just out of curiosity, is there a template for these reports? Remind me, I forget.
I don't know.
So at this point for the farm plan, so at this point, that what there's no clarity as to whether what an individual farmer would consider proprietary and what we would consider proprietary in terms of general categories, whether those coincide. Is that correct?
Correct, and that's why it's up to the farmer to identify what they think is proprietary. And there's quite a bit of case law. I mean, this has been a big issue in the case law about how to do that, including the area of agricultural information. But it's really up to them to identify what they think is confidential. And it only becomes an issue if then someone makes a Public Record Act request for the document, and then which in the process then is to go back to the farmer and say, you know, what, justify why you think this is proprietary, because we've been asked for it. And so it's not released till they agree to it.
I know we're well past the 11th hour. It would certainly be nice to simply have a definition of what the case law says is proprietary that might answer the question.
Yeah, and it's really up to them to say what they think is proprietary. And I've been doing, you know, attorney for the board now for 25 years, and only once has anybody ever asked for a report, and it's even been an issue in my experience. So it's been pretty straightforward. They identify it, we keep it confidential.
Okay, continue.
Okay. Next slide, paragraph 46, page 21. The recommendation is to delete this text. And rather than read it all, I will instead read our reason for not agreeing with the deletion. This finding is a high priority inclusion for environmental justice. Individuals concerned about drinking water and other stakeholders, they've expressed concern about this very issue and wanted it to be in the order. And the State Water Board does have goals with respect to environmental justice, as I mentioned yesterday.
And I wanted to jump in here because the rationale that I heard from Tess for deleting this was that it was redundant under the law, so that it's inappropriate to include it as a condition of the waiver.
It's right, and actually it shouldn't be in this portion. I agree with Tess, too, that it should be. This is the order part. It should be a finding. It can be a finding in the order. It's not an order. It's not a part of the order part.
I agree. That's our mistake. We agreed last night that this was going to be moved and made an order and
made a finding.
Made a finding and not a condition. Yeah. Correct.
And it's just more like notice to people that these are the kinds of things that can happen.
So this language will be this language would be kept, but it'd be kept in a finding?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
So just an informational.
All right.
Okay, continue.
Okay, next slide I'm going to skip because we're going to deal with Part E in a few minutes. Next slide is paragraph 52, page 22. And we're not going to add this language here as suggested because we have included this language in the monitoring and reporting program, and it's not necessary to make this change and include it in the order as well.
Does it hurt or reduce the quality of the document to include it in an additional location, as they're suggesting?
No, it doesn't.
So,
well, I had a concern with it because it's kind of ambiguous the way it's written, whereas in the MRP it's much more clearly stated under what circumstances you either do individual or group monitoring. So to put this kind of general thing here creates ambiguity later because the sentence is to comply with the MRPs. The MRP includes the language that's very specific about how you do group monitoring.
The MRP is much more specific about the areas in which it applies.
So this might be an example of a subsequent plain English summary of the ag waiver could say something about this being allowed either individually or through a cooperative monitoring program if you choose to do it one way or the other, you need to refer to the MRP for further direction. But it's just something to keep in mind as an example of a subsequent plain English summary.
So this is just a list of items in the in the notice of intent. They suggested an option related to Part E, and we're going to discuss that in a moment, so I won't talk about that one. The second one is a suggestion to add a place on the NOI to identify cooperative monitoring, groundwater monitoring, similar to the cooperative surface water monitoring election. And that's fine. We agree with that. There was an additional suggestion at the end to delete information on the notice of intent, which is asking farmers if there is the presence and location of any perennial, intermittent, or ephemeral streams or riparian or wetland habitats on their farm. We disagree with this deletion. What it does is having that checkbox, it really is just a checkbox in terms of, do you have a stream adjacent to or running through your property? It allows us to identify those farms quickly and to prioritize those if necessary. So we disagree with that deletion.
And through the chair, can I jump in?
Yes.
What I have down that Tess stated on this was that there was no need for a standalone requirement. And those are my words, I may be incorrect. But if I'm correct, is this a standalone requirement or is it just a checklist item?
This is just a checkbox on the notice of intent. What I understood from Ms. Dunham yesterday was she said it was not necessary because they already included that farm map, and that the locations of streams were located on the farm map. That's what was written in my notes. This is simply a checkbox. Do you have a creek or not? And without the checkbox, staff has to go into every single farm map and look at them and say who has a creek running through their property or not. So this is just a checkbox to say presence, absence, and allows us to prioritize them quickly.
What I recall from the discussion wasn't just that you could get this information from the farm map, but that the question of figuring out some of these things, it's easy to know if you have a stream. If you have a wetland area habitat, her statement was that could require a fairly comprehensive study to answer the question. That some of these have some of the categories that are in, I can't really tell from this if it's N or what the last one there,
N.
are fairly obvious and some are not, and that it was you would not necessarily get an accurate answer.
This is just a screening level, and so we're not using it as a definitive interpretation of whether or not it's an actual wetland per the definition. What we're looking at is there streams, creeks, or other wetland area riparian types of habitat running through the property or are adjacent to the property.
So, in other words, you're not expecting them to hire an expert?
No.
To help them answer those questions? It's if they know.
That's correct.
And it won't change their tier depending on
how they
answer.
And it does not change their tier. No, it's merely a screening tool for us.
And to me, a wetland area habitat means, in my mind, a pond or a lake. Okay. That's your interpretation as well?
I think that's a fair characterization.
Okay. All right.
Well, the definition may be more complicated than that. As to what's a wetland, so on.
Right, but the official definition is more complicated than that.
Yes.
But in the farmers' minds, in my minds, a wetland looks different than a creek. It looks like a round object that has surface water. I mean,
there's actually a definition in the order.
Yeah, it could be a marsh.
I don't know if you heard Angela. There's a definition in the order, so they can look at that and say yes or no.
Okay.
You know.
So in real life, I think when they fill this out, they're going to check the box according to their mindset. They're not going to go look for the definition buried in the order.
Right.
And so if they see a seepy area with water on top of it, they may not think of that as a wetland area, and they may not check that box or put that on a map.
One thing we could do then to address your comment, Mr. Delgado, is similar to other areas of the notice of intent already, we have a link on the side for those that require more definition, and you simply click on that wetland and the definition pops up so they can see it right there.
I'm going to skip the next slide.
We should just go to
Part 8.